Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Syrian government is accusing terrorists of launching another chemical attack, this time on the northern city of Aleppo, as terrorists in Idlib launched chlorine-fired shells towards Aleppo. Over 100 people were injured with vision and breathing problems. Now, the Syrian government is demanding the United Nations condemn the attack and ask, why isn't this chemical attack being hardly talked about in the capitals of those who claim to support human rights? For more details on the story, we're now joined by our correspondent in Damascus, Mohammed Ali. Mohammed Ali, good to have you with us. Well, fill us in, please, on the latest information you have on this situation.
Yes, the final number of the injured people is 107, of course, as a result of the terrorists' shelling of Aleppo, various parts over there. There are several reactions coming out from both the Syrian side and the Russian side. Spokesperson for the Russian Foreign Ministry, Maria Zakharova, said that the terrorists' shelling is an attempt to undermine the restoration of normal life in Syria and requires strong condemnation by the international community, at the same time, the spokesperson for the Russian Ministry of Defense, Igor Konashenkov, said that the symptoms seen on injured people, difficulties in breathing and blurred vision, confirmed that the mortar shells did include chlorine gas, and that also the Russian airbase of Hmeymim here in Syria confirmed that its fighter jets located where the mortars were fired from, which is El Brekiyat village, and attacked the areas where those mortars came out and destroyed all of the targets over there. While the Syrian Foreign Ministry sent two letters to the United Nations Security Council and Secretary General saying that there are some countries that are facilitating the reach of chemical substances to the terrorists in Syria, and this attack is a result of such a facilitation. The Foreign Ministry asked the United Nations Security Council to strongly and directly condemn this attack, and also asked the UN Security Council to shoulder its responsibility in preserving international peace and security by taking measures, punitive and direct measures, against states that are funding terrorism in Syria. This is according to the Foreign Ministry. Of course, this is not the first time that there is a similar attack of mortar shells by terrorists with chlorine gas. This happened previously also in Aleppo in 2016 and before in various parts in Syria.
Thank you so much for that update out of Damascus, Press TV's Mohammed Ali. Now I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of Washington, D.C. We have Nabil Michal, Professor George Washington University. And out of Brussels, we have Brett Jonkers, journalist, Al Masdar News. Thank you so much for being with us, both of you. Well, let's start our discussion off in D.C. with Nabil. How can these attacks continue to happen without anyone being held accountable?
There will be people held accountable. The question is what kind of reaction America will have in reference to this attack, and in specific, what will be the response of the Trump administration? I assure you that President Trump and his advisors, his CIA personnel, and the Department of Defense hierarchy are talking about it. So this is important. The question is, will America initiate a military action to revenge for the use of chemical weapons? That can happen. So it will be an American attack against Syria. But the question is, whom America will be targeting? So far, if, let us suppose, say that the attack came from ISIL and from the location in northern Syria, whereby the decision to launch a U.S. attack to liberate Raqqa, which is the bastion of Daesh or ISIL, is found. So this means that America will be basically changing its policy that has been stipulated for the past 4 or 5 months, that America will not launch an attack against Raqqa now. Russia also agreed to that American self-restraint. So America now is facing a big test. Will they launch an attack against northern Syria? Will they violate or repeal the self-imposed armistice they have signed or declared in northern Syria? And how strong will be the attack against elements of ISIL?
Okay, stay
because
with me, Nabil.
Because if you have an American attack in northern
Syria... Let me get Brett in on this discussion. Your take on what Nabil has said, that basically, of course, the U.S. is going to react, and they will be attacking that area. Actually, it's al-Nusra Front terrorists who are there in that area. Your take on that, because if we're going to see a reaction out of the U.S., so far we haven't seen very much from the American mainstream media reacting to this.
Yeah, I wouldn't place much hope in a real American reaction. I think when I believe it was the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Javad Zarif, who said that the hypocrisy of the Western powers is very stunning, because they are immediately there to condemn any chemical attack anytime they believe that it's the Syrian government that is behind it, even though at several points they have failed to prove any of these claims, of course. But now, at a point when a chemical weapon openly lands in Syria, let's say in a government-held zone, as that is called, then you don't actually hear anything from them at all. It would be possible, of course, that the United States would indeed decide to somehow start some sort of token bombing of what they claim are ISIS-held territories, for example, in northeast Syria, like said before. But the problem then is that bombing would have absolutely nothing to do with the actual culprits of this attack, because this attack did not take place, of course, in northeast Syria. It did not take place in the occupied zones or in the Kurdish-held territories. The attack took place in Aleppo, in a government-held area. This attack came from one of the so-called demilitarized zones, let's say, the zones of the peace agreement that were agreed upon, for example, in the Astana process. These came from al-Nusra Front terrorists, so al-Qaeda-linked terrorists, who are operating under supervision of the Turkish forces that are supposed to be the peacekeepers in that area. And I don't have any hope in the fact, in the idea that the United States would indeed start, for example, slapping Turkey with sanctions or start bombing al-Qaeda-held territories in regions that are under the custody of a fellow NATO member, which Turkey, of course, is.
Well, Nabil, how difficult would it be to prove who's done this? I mean, we know that the Syrian government has no chemical weapons, of course, as certified by the OPCW back in 2014. So why is this difficult to prove who has done this? And why haven't we heard anything so far out of the United Nations?
Like say, difficulty here has two meanings. It's actually not difficult to prove that there is a user, a perpetrator of a chemical weapons attack. Satellite photos, listening equipments, agents can report the use of chemical weapons, and not the least, Russia can tip America who did it. This is something that will not be too complex. But the real dilemma stems from the fact that if really America wants to hit the perpetrator of that chemical attack the same way they did it against the government of Bashar al-Assad in April 2017 and 2018, here they will have to take into consideration Russia, because we have a dearth of information about the situation. But what I looked up on the internet was saying that Russia is now attacking the sites where the chemical weapons attack came from. So here there is a high risk that America could be hitting an area controlled by Russia and aiming at Russian targets. This is very serious. This is dangerous. It could be some sort of a brinkmanship on the soil of northern Syria between Moscow and Washington. So the question is, how careful is Trump towards such a situation? I'm quite sure he will be fully apprised of what transpired over the past 24 hours or 48 hours, and he will be kept updated. So it's a crisis. The question is how Washington is going to manage this crisis and what kind of messages will be exchanged between America and Russia in its reference.
Okay, well, what about that, Brett? I mean, who are supporting these particular terrorists anyway in that region, because what we saw in the de-escalation or demilitarized zone, that was set up basically the United States, the UK, definitely forced this situation along with Turkey that Russia actually accepted it. So first of all, who are the entities supporting these terrorists in that demilitarized or de-escalated zone?
Well, I think it's very important that we have to look at the role that is being played by several regional powers, as well as the United States, of course, itself. And very interestingly, which is, of course, not it's not a proven fact about this specific attack, but these groups, these Wahhabi Takfiri groups that are active in Idlib and used to be active up until a few months ago, used to be active in also in the Golan Heights and at the border of Israel. Interestingly, I believe it was today or yesterday that a retired major general of the Israeli army, by the way, the name of Gershon HaKohen, said that the former Israeli defense minister Moshe Ya'alon actually met with several high-ranking members of Syrian rebel and terrorist forces. So this was admitted, and in fact it was a bit of a public secret even before this. Everyone who had any, who did any analysis on the situation, knew that there was something fishy going on with the fact that there were terrorists and there was Al-Qaeda and ISIS forces located right at the border of Israel, without trying any, without there being any conflict between Israeli border guards and these terrorist forces. Of course, it's already a very suspicious thing. And this operation that lasted until September 2018, which was called Operation Good Neighbor, basically foresaw in a massive amount of support, which the Israelis called humanitarian support, of course, an IDF from the Israeli army, an IDF support campaign against terrorist forces, against what they call rebel forces in the Golan Heights and in western Syria. So it would not be surprising, of course, that the support that was given back then and perhaps is still being given right now has had an influence on the fact that these terrorist forces have still been able to remain, to retain their strength despite everything. Secondly, I don't want to I don't want to disqualify, let's say, Turkey as a potential partner in crime of some of these terrorist forces. We know that the so-called Free Syrian Army, the so-called moderate forces, which are also terrorists, in fact, have been supported by the Turkish government for several years. And despite the fact that Al-Qaeda-linked groups, that these Takfiri Wahhabi groups, are officially not even part of the peace process and are not even supposed to be allowed to continue to exist in these areas, even by the Turks, according to the binding agreements, these forces were not even supposed to get to exist anymore. This was supposed to only extend, this peace treaty was supposed to only extend to the moderate rebels. But despite that, ever since the de-escalation zones were set up, we see that still, even now, we have Al-Qaeda groups, we have ISIS groups, we have all these fractionary Wahhabi terrorist forces that are still being active in areas that are under direct supervision of Turkey, which again betrays a certain form of cooperation, or at least a quiet permission by the Turkish government.
All right, stay with me, Brett. Let me get Nabil back in on this conversation. Well, Nabil, what's your perspective? I mean, this de-escalation zone or demilitarized zone that was set up, I mean, of course, the Syrian government wanted to rid its territory of all terrorists, but of course this agreement was agreed upon. But at the end of the day, can Syria actually ever have real peace as long as there are regions inside of the country that where terrorists are still there?
Look, these collision zones are dangerous zones because they are enemy zones. They are the havens for terrorists. The problem is that America, since Obama, has not been able to organize an international coalition against Syria. Because look at what happened, say, 2 weeks ago when this summit meeting between Putin, Trump, Macron, and Erdogan took place in Paris. They basically extended the ceasefire in northern Syria, but they are not able to organize a coalition to get rid of these terror elements. So it is basically the responsibility of the international community. I will blame more the Obama administration for neglecting this crisis. Trump somehow is trying to balance things. He's trying to reach some agreement with Putin. But each one of them, I would say Trump is more constrained by domestic factors and coordinating with Russia, because there are accusations that Russia is spying on America, Russia is sabotaging the American democratic foundations. But it is the plight of the Syrian people, and it is the right of Syria to assert its sovereignty over its land. So these demilitarized zones are shameful spots on the geopolitical map of the Middle East. Russia and America should cooperate together to eliminate it, and Turkey will concede to such a joint action by two big powers.
Well, Nabil, is that practical? Is it likely to happen when some of these same so-called countries of the international communities were the ones that were involved in trying to destabilize Syria to begin with, and were some of the same ones that actually supported some of these terrorist groups?
The Syrian crisis has had so many contours, and things changed when Trump came to power. He cut aid, the CIA-funded programs, to some of these groups, from the Syrian Free Army to other groups. So America had a chance to do well with other powers involved in the Syrian crisis. But Trump now is approaching his second year, almost 22 months in the office. Yes, the escalation zones have been shrunk in size. Many ISIL elements have been eliminated, but danger is still looming large.
Okay.
So any high-level diplomatic talk cannot yield any effective military action. So it's a question of a failure of a strategy by the U.S. and by every other party to the crisis.
Okay. Well, Brett, what is it going to take, in your perspective, to basically see the Syrian war come to an end? What is it going to take, basically, for these terrorists and their backers to accept that they have lost this war?
I believe that the only thing that can happen is either the terrorists and the so-called rebels in Syria, they either disarm and they capitulate, they surrender, or they flee the country. That's one option. Or the other option is indeed like what the Al-Nusra Front originally has as promised, let's say, and the umbrella organization called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, what they said is they would fight until the very end. But of course, the HDS terrorists, the Al-Nusra terrorists, have been reduced significantly in number and in strength, especially since direct CIA funding to them was cut, indeed thanks to the Trump administration. Of course, it was a program that never should have existed in the first place. But these terrorist movements have been reduced in strength significantly. So either they accept what is happening, and they accept one of the numerous offers of amnesty that has been extended to them by Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, or they basically will meet their doom by the Syrian Arab army. These de-escalation zones, and we should not make any illusions about this, I believe indeed has been said very well just now, that these de-escalation zones are in the long term, this would be shameful, this would be a violation of Syria's territorial integrity and sovereignty. These de-escalation zones are temporary measures meant for these people, for these movements, these terrorist groups to demilitarize and to disarm. And if necessary, this is actually a plan that was talked about, for example, in the United Kingdom. There are actually potential plans by the British government of maybe giving these terrorists, terrorists in Syria, giving them citizenship in the United Kingdom, or bringing them over to the United Kingdom. I'd say, well, if they really like them, if they love them so much, if they have been supporting them for all these years, that's probably the better option. Then let them be moved to Europe, let them be moved to America, let them be moved into Turkey, whatever country wants to have them. But they should no longer be in Syria. They have to get out of the country, and they have to stop murdering the Syrian people and occupying the areas that are part of the sovereign Syrian Arab Republic.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nabil, the Syrians and the Russians, as you said, the Russians have bombed the areas where the attacks were initiated in Idlib. How likely, because you alluded to the danger of this situation right now, possible clashing between Russia, for example, and the United States, how likely are we to see a continuation of this bombing campaign and maybe even an escalation as far as the Syrian military now entering that area and trying to finish them off as they had wanted to do before?
Let me just make it in a kind of a humorous way. I will place myself in the figure of Donald Trump, and I will be waiting the official explanation by the Russian Defense Ministry or the Kremlin itself for how long will their campaign continue against these elements. If we have now a statement from the Russian Defense Ministry that we have basically found out who did it and we took care of them, okay, they will tell the Americans. In this case, the burden will be on Trump. Is he going to take a military action? Will he go and talk with the CIA and the Defense Department in America? So basically, it depends on Russia. What is the narrative? What is the narrative coming from Moscow? This is what will America be listening to, from the ordinary citizen to the President of the United States. If their explanation is satisfactory to President Trump, I do not think he will order an American attack against northern Syria.
All right, and on that note, we have run out of time. I appreciate both of you being with us, Nabil Mikhail, Professor George at Washington University out of Washington, D.C., and Brett Yonkers, journalist, Al Masdar News, out of Brussels. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.